Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Well, let me introduce Rebecca Williams, our guest. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist in California. She is the owner of Inland Empire Couples Counseling and specializes in helping mixed faith and religious secular couples have connected, intimate, satisfying relationships. In addition to education and professional experience, Rebecca knows the personal experience, how hard it is to leave your faith, but not have your marriage, not leave your marriage too. Sorry, I stumbled through that pretty bad. Rebecca, welcome. We're so glad that you're here. We also understand that you're developing an online course for the religious secular couples and also to help individuals who want to recover from the damaging or trauma from the religion and to go on and live their best lives.
I am. And the timeline for releasing the course is all up in the air because of the way that this pandemic is impacting other areas of my life, but it will still get completed.
So yeah, this course,
I can't tell you right now when.
I wish I had scheduled for this COVID-19. I mean, I'm looking back.
I know, right?
Didn't set any time aside for it. This virus is a punk.
Is your course that you're offering, is this course going to be just for your clients? Are you having this open to the public?
No, the idea is that it would be open to the public, something that couples could go through on their own, and a way for me to take what I've learned from working with the clients that I've seen in my practice and to be able to help more people beyond those that I live close enough to come to my office or... sometimes I get full and I can't see any more people. And so, this course would be a way for me to still be able to provide that service and to share all of the stuff that I've learned that really helps for people.
And help more people. And is this course going to be offered for a fee or is it going to be?
It will be a fee. I just don't know yet what exactly that will be. Okay. But yes, it'll be a paid thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Well, that's awesome. So today we're going to be talking about mixed secular / religious relationships. And I kind of wanted to start this off with one of the dumbest and one of the most basic questions. How do people end up in these types of relationships?
Yeah. So some people sign up for it. They think they know what they're getting into. And honestly, for lots of people, it works out just fine. And it's not really a big deal. Mm-hmm. Other people who sign up for it maybe hit some bumps down the road when they go through some kind of life change, they have kids, and now that difference in worldview takes on a different meaning. Sometimes, one person will become a little more strident in their religious observance or in their atheism and, wanting to advocate for those causes that then places strain on the relationship. But I think more commonly, the couples that I work with end up in one of these kind of relationships when somebody changes.
Yeah.
Less common, I think two people start out secular and one of them finds God and becomes religious. Most of the people that I work with are ones where one of the partner deconverts. And this can feel like a betrayal to the spouse who's still in. Or who is still believing because this is not the relationship that I signed up for.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's often pretty common that people will wonder if you could so easily leave God and leave our faith, would you turn your back on me too?
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a pretty common concern for the partner who stays in the faith. Lots of people consider separation or divorce at this point. And some people find out that when they don't have religion in common anymore, they don't really have much in common and they decide to separate. And that's great for them. But then there's this other group of people who really want to find a way to make their relationships work. who don't want to have to lose everything when they lost their faith. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're here today. Yeah.
There's another group that's probably not near as common either, is where they both lose the faith. They walk out together and then they find themselves that now we don't have anything in common now, since mm-hmm. we don't have this God belief. This God belief is what kept us together.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, some of those people find new things in common and decide they want to stay together. And sometimes they decide to divorce. And sometimes they consider their separation to be something along the lines of like, graduating to a new phase of life. Like the divorce doesn't have to mean a failure or to have a lot of stigma around it. It can just be like, we grew apart and we're different mm-hmm. people now. And our lives are taking a different direction than we thought they would when we got together. And so we're choosing to separate. They call it like conscious uncoupling.
Yeah. New chapter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you like to kind of see the results from our polls?
Yeah, let's look at it.
All right. Here we go. So from the looks of it, the first question, are you currently in a secular / religious mixed relationship? And 39% said yes, 53% said no, and 8% weren't sure. A couple of them weren't sure. Now, there was a little bit of a, you couldn't necessarily submit this poll without answering this next question. So it was kind of an issue, but I think we can sort of figure it out. So we kind of want to know who were the people watching this. And 94 said that they're the secular person in their relationship watching this, and 94%, 3% said that they're the religious person watching it, and 1% is that they're watching it together, or 3% are watching it together. It's kind of cool.
Hey, well, now on that second one, it says there's one person that's watching it together with their spouse, but apparently they're just one person watching it without their spouse.
Right. One that's religious person watching it without their spouse. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that you showed up. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. And then question three, do you know people who are in a secular / religious mixed relationship? 56% said yes. 17% said no. 28% said, I don't know.
Sometimes we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we decided for the purpose of some brevity and clarity to kind of focus this conversation on the marriage or intimate relationship side of things. But I certainly hope that a lot of what I have to say, the kind of general principles, are going to apply to any religious people that you have in your life. Even if that's not your spouse, it might be, you know, friends, parents, whatever. So hopefully there's something beneficial for everybody who's here.
And what'll be kind of neat is that as the questions come up, we'll get them copied and put into our document and ask you as we go along.
Yes, I would love it. And I want everybody to know, ask the questions as we go. I have a couple places in the in my outline planned for taking questions. And I will hang around after we stop the recording and go into the conversation part to answer anything that we didn't get to or somehow skipped over during this part. So yeah. Perfect. Okay. So let's talk about why this difference causes problems for people. I mean, aside from, I think, you know, maybe there's a sort of obvious, an element of that seems obvious to people. Well, what are you supposed to do on Sundays, or how do you decide how you're going to raise your kids or whatever? I'm going to share a little bit about, or like putting this into context of other marriage problems that people face. So there's this awesome research on what makes happy couples happy. Like, what do they have in common? How do people manage conflict? It's stuff that I use in my work with all the couples that I see. And these researchers found that there's like 69% of the problems that couples face in their relationship don't have solutions. They come from just like, the problems or differences stem from the two people are just different people.
Wait, 69%?
69%.
Of the problems don't have solutions?
Don't have solutions.
And it's just based or just merely because of different opinions within the relationship?
Pretty much. I mean, you look at like in every couple, one person has a higher libido than the other one. Somebody's more of a spender, somebody's more of a saver. Someone's a little more cluttery, a little more punctual, whatever, than the other person.
Oh.
And what I tell couples is like, the degree of difference between the two of you on any one of those issues will determine whether that's something that you argue about all the time or whether it's a difference that you hardly notice. But I think that it's important to know that these things exist in all relationships, that you have stuff where the two of you are just different. It doesn't have to be a right or wrong. You're just different. And you don't want to hurt your relationship by spending a lot of time arguing about who's right or who's wrong or who's more wrong on one of these areas where you're just different. So you, like, smart couples learn to have different kinds of conversations. So the conversation around that conflict issue isn't which person's way is better. The conversation is, how do we accommodate around these differences when we can just accept that we're different?
I see. Okay. So I see. So if one person is messy and another person is neat, then a good compromise would be like, you can be messy, but in this one room type of thing. Is that?
Exactly. And like that kind of a conversation is where you're actually going to get somewhere in your relationship instead of spinning your wheels, arguing about like, you're such an awful person because you're messy.
Messy.
Hey, you just cause damage to each other. And then that person's all defending themselves. Well, it's not me. Like, you're just a neat freak. You got to stick up your butt. What's wrong with you? And like, that's not the conversation that you need to have. If you could just accept, we approach these things differently. We have a different comfort level. Then we can actually get somewhere.
So this sounds like, it's kind of like a basic tool that can be applied to this religious, secular, mixed relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So my point in bringing this up is that people who are in this relation, in these relationships, you already have a bunch of those issues where you're just different. And now we're moving, like, religion used to be a same thing. And now we're moving it over to like, this is an area where we disagree, but you likely have some of the skills already to manage disagreements. You just got to move them to the new topic. And also I wanted like, frame that up and share the research behind it so that people know that you can still have a really happy, close, connected, loving relationship, even when there is difference in the relationship, because all relationships have difference and differences that you're not going to be able to change about the other person.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
No, I can see that.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes sense.
What about the argument that when it comes to religion, this is bigger than just being messy or being neat, because this has an eternal effect on the one partner. And so it's more at risk or more, you know, in weight for the relationship.
Yeah, it's more of a fraught topic.
Yeah.
Because this difference isn't just any difference that's sort of neutral. It gets at the heart of a couple's sense of shared meaning and togetherness. So that same research that I referenced before says that, I'm just seeing a chat. Do you mind sharing the research? Yeah, it's from John Gottman. And the resources that we're going to post at the end have a couple of his books there that you can look at. So like one of the things that happy couples have in common is a sense of shared meaning. And this is like, we talk about having shared values, shared purpose. It's your rituals and traditions and even your roles, like what you expect of each other as partners or as co-parents. And I think that the way that religion intersects and overlaps with all of that shared meaning stuff is part of why this religious secular difference in relationships feels like it's so much bigger. It is so much bigger. And we're going to get, when I get into tips later on, we're going to be talking about what are ways that you can negotiate around some of those things so that you still have a sense of shared meaning. But there also is a lot, like people can experience some grief, call back to last week, like some grief and loss around, we used to have these things in common and now we don't. And I think that it really is okay to allow yourselves to acknowledge that loss and to feel it and to grieve it. And then you can also decide to rebuild or come back and reconnect around what is it that we do still have in common.
So it sounds like you're suggesting that this feeling of angst and frustration within the couple, if it was identified as grief, it may be able to be handled in a much different way?
Yeah, because the thing is, it is grief. Mm-hmm. It's a loss. You've lost this togetherness, this area where you used to find connection as a couple. And for many couples, the loss also includes loss of future dreams.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought that as a couple, we were going to do missionary work together. Mm. Or we were going to, you know, we had these plans about the lives that our kids would have within our faith tradition and within our community. And when one person leaves the faith, all of that is gone, or at least called into question. Mm. And that can be a real loss for people. And honestly, sometimes it's a loss for the person who left too.
Yeah.
I know.
Loss of friends, the loss of community too is probably severed.
Yeah.
Like, so that's another hurt.
I had all these plans, these things that were laid out for me of how my life was supposed to be, what would be the milestones in my life. And lots of those were informed by my faith. And then when I didn't believe anymore, I lost the stuff that I had planned for the future. And I think it's okay to grieve the loss, to just recognize that, like, part of why this is hard is that I don't know what I'm supposed to do anymore. I have to go back and figure out in a new way what my plans are for my life, how I want it to look when I get older, what it is I'm striving for in my life.
This, yeah, I mean, it sounds, working in these, in the support groups for, I don't know, like 5 years or so, there has been a lot of questions that come up. Like, I don't know how we can raise our kids, types of thing. And that seems to be one of the biggest things with these religious/secular relationships. A lot of them, folks want to send their kids to a religious private school, and the other spouse no longer want to do that, is no longer behind it.
Yeah. I think that's a big thing that comes up when people have kids and when this change happens. You know, people end up in these relationships after getting together.
Yeah.
Because
how are we going to raise them now? Well, before everything was laid out for us, now what?
Yeah. Exactly. And it's a place where the religious spouse often feels like the rug just got pulled out from under them. Mm-hmm. And there can be a lot of anger and resentment there. Mm. Now I have to question all of these plans that I had for my life and the way that I wanted to raise my kids, and I didn't ask for this.
Yeah, it's like starting over in a sense, mm-hmm. like having to rebuild, reform some plans that were already kind of in place.
Yeah. Okay, I have some tips for how people can manage the difference. But before we jump into that, are there any questions that we should address right now?
Sure. One person asked if you had any experience with this, like yourself, and if you'd be willing to share that at all.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I was raised in religion as a Mormon. My husband and I got together because that was our shared faith. And then I left the church, and it was really hard on our marriage. And we sort of had to stumble through figuring out how to make that work. And since that time, I have worked professionally with a lot of couples helping them figure this out. So I have personal experience, but then also experience on the professional side too. So yeah, I've lived through it.
Awesome. We have another question here, and this is a little long. Let me see if I can suss this out. This person asked, my wife's belief/faith is preventing her from allowing my daughter from participating in my secular parenting group. In part, this is because she's afraid that I will corrupt her corrupt the daughter with a secular worldview. And working to get his rights as a father, but has to ask his wife for some justification for him wanting to raise his daughter secular. Are we going to go into some tips about that? Do you think? Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yeah. So let's go through the tips. And then if we didn't answer your question fully and you want to ask it again, then ask it again later.
Perfect.
I hope that some of what we're going to talk about will address that.
Perfect.
Anything else? Are we ready to jump?
Go ahead. Let's get into some tips. What are, How would a couple manage this difference?
All right. So the first thing is, don't take your anger at religion out on your partner.
Ooh, that's...
just going to sit with that one for a second.
Because I know for me, when I came out of an atheist, when I came out of a magical thinking, I was angry. And I just was angry, and I still kind of am. But I was angry, and I didn't know, I didn't have a place where I could express that.
Mm-hmm. And it's so easy when living right there in your same house, you have a person who espouses all of these beliefs and is like a representative of that belief system. Yeah. And it's mm-hmm. so easy to just like take all of this stuff that can be kind of amorphous. Who are you even supposed to be mad at? And unload it right at your partner.
And so, feel justified and feel right about doing it. Like, yeah, you are wrong because look at what Christopher Hitchens wrote. You know,
right? Yes.
Our partners aren't punching bags though. So
exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And the thing about it is, like, they don't deserve that. Your spouse does not deserve to be the recipient of all of that anger. They didn't do this to you. All the hurt that you feel, the ways that you were, that you feel you were betrayed and wronged by religion, like, that didn't come at the hands of your partner.
What would be another place to get this anger, get this frustration out? Where could that?
Support groups, online community. It's not that those needs aren't important. Like, you got to go through this process and, go through the transition and feel all the things. Just don't let your partner be the punching bag for all the bad feelings that you have about religion. Because here's the thing, is that if you want your marriage to survive, you can't do that. Because unloading that kind of negativity on your spouse will damage your marriage. And it seriously betrays the trust that your partner has in you and their ability to feel emotionally safe and comfortable in your presence.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot.
Because so you have to learn. Go ahead, Todd.
You have to learn to control that anger, because that anger is real. It's a real feeling that you have, and you mm-hmm. got to be able to put it on pause when you're around your partner.
Yes. And often the religious spouse will tell me things like, I feel like I have my guard up all the time. I'm walking on eggshells because I never know when one of these barrages of anger or all these complaints are going to come at me. And they don't feel like they can be themselves with you anymore. They don't feel
when I was first coming out, that was all in my mind. I mean, my whole thoughts was all absorbed in thinking about the religious and the harm and why I believed it and wasted my life on believing so much. Yeah. And it's hard to get that out of that mindset, even when you're around your spouse.
Right. And I think it's okay to say to your spouse, like, I'm feeling really angry right now, or I've got some stuff going on. I'm like all in my head. Like, you can acknowledge that that's what's going on. You just don't want to be the person who like makes your spouse sit there while you yell at them.
And this
that's not good for your marriage.
This kind of goes both ways. It's not just like the secular person reacting to the religious. It would be some that you're talking about tips that would be useful for both sides of the relationship.
Exactly. Too.
All right.
Yeah, I think that I worded it that way. Don't take your anger out on religion, because I know I'm talking to recovering from religion group, and I'm most likely, you know, most of our audience is going to be on the other side.
Yeah. So it sounds almost like if I were in the middle of Alabama or something like that, and I come out of religion and the only person really around me is my wife, it sounds like I would need to actively find a place to kind of get this frustration, get this anger out, and like actively find a space for that.
Yes. Yes. You have that need. And I think that for most people, it's too much to expect your spouse to fill that need for you.
Got it. And that would even include some professional therapy, as well as maybe some secular groups, like online or in person?
Yeah, totally. In my experience, therapy alone usually isn't quite enough. Mm-hmm. It's great, but people need that connection, the support of other people to say, oh yeah, I've been through that too. And a place where you can just kind of unload it all, right?
Yeah, we need other that human connection. And you know what? We have a great resource for that. If people need that, they can reach out to Eric Wells, the support group leader for Recovering from Religion, and find a group in your area and make that connection.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Todd.
The mail. But no, in all honesty, when people come in to see me in my office and we're talking about these like leaving faith issues, that's one thing I always recommend. I'm like assessing and recommending, like, have you met other people? Mm. Do you have support people? Because you probably need new friendships now. You need a new community where you feel like you belong. Like, yeah, it's really important. So yes, reach out and find people.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that I have a tendency to do is try to, like, I think that I'm right with this brand new belief system. And so everybody around me is wrong. And so my job, not only when I was a Christian, but now that as an atheist, I'm like, I've got to do some converting around here. I got to show them that they're got some magical thinking. Like, but you're kind of saying, or almost like you're pointing to, that doesn't work.
It does not work. And that's the next tip. Do not try to change each other. It doesn't work. Really, it doesn't. If you think about yourself when you were believing, anyone who would have come to me to try to like talk me out of my faith, I would have immediately dismissed them and been really angry at their attacks. So like, for one, it, even though the motivation is totally understandable, it doesn't work. And here's the principle for relationships. It's a golden rule kind of a thing. Like, you don't want to become a missionary for atheism, because it's just as obnoxious to your religious partner for you to try to convince them out of their faith as them preaching to you to try to convince you to believe again is to you.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. That resource I put out in our advertisement on the Everyone's Agnostic podcast tells a story from Jeremy and Elisa. And Jeremy was secular and his wife was still in the religion. And the patience and the kindness and the gentleness that he showed towards his wife, who was still in the religion, giving her the freedom to be herself, was so beautiful. It was such a beautiful example. And that's why I posted that. So I thought that would be really helpful for people to see that, allowing your spouse to be themselves and to have their own journey.
Yes, absolutely. And like, I think, well, what do I want to say here? I don't know. I'll come back to that later. I think that sometimes at the heart of us trying really hard to convince our spouses is, one, like, we feel all of this energy around the change that we've been through and we want to help them. But sometimes it stems from just like not wanting to accept the reality that like, this is what our marriage looks like now. These are problems that we have to learn how to deal with. And there can be this sort of hidden agenda almost to like, well, if you would just leave too, then all this would be fixed. And the thing is that like, hidden agendas are never that hidden. Your spouse knows. They know what you're trying to get at. And it doesn't work and it doesn't feel good. Just like, you know, when they're hinting it, you should just pray and start believing again. Even if they deny that that's what's going on, you know, it doesn't feel good. And here's the thing, is that if we go back to what I was saying before about the perpetual problems in relationships and some of these things just don't have solutions, really accepting that this difference exists and it's probably not going to change or go away is like at the heart of making these relationships work. Like, if you can just accept that reality, you're going to be in a better place. And like, your spouse might decide to change later. They might deconvert later. You don't know. You probably never thought, your religious you never thought that you were going to deconvert, and here you are. It could happen. But proceeding with that intention of making that happen in your spouse is a losing strategy.
It sounds like if I were, it sounds almost like I have to make I'm kind of putting myself into that place. I have to make a choice. What is more important to me is my relationship with my spouse or my disbelief, my beliefs, my, you know, in my, me, my atheism or my Christianity. That choice has to be made internally. Yep. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, I think so. And if you decide that you're prioritizing your relationship, it doesn't mean that the other isn't important. It just means that you're saying, I'm willing to make certain compromises. I'm willing to accommodate around this because I want to save this marriage, because I want this relationship to work. Not because we got together when we were both believers, but because I genuinely love this person as a person and I want them to be in my life.
You know, Oasis has a saying that they say is people are more important than beliefs. And that works both ways. So it goes both, and I have always been looking at it from the religious, viewing their beliefs are more important than people, but people of non-belief can do the same thing back to the religious people.
Yeah, that's a great, great little phrase there. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. And I want everybody to just think for a second, like, about how hard this transition is for most people, what it was like for you. Mm-hmm. The pain, the confusion, the betrayal, all of the like regret and reorganizing your life and your beliefs and like just all of the turmoil of it. And then think about your spouse and how much you love them. And like, is that really an experience that you wish on them? I want you to have to go through this really awful thing that I went through. Most of us would say no. Like if we really genuinely can connect in with loving our partners and wanting them to have the best life, it's hard to be like, yeah, I want you to have to go through this like shitty thing.
Yeah. Let's say I'm in a relationship, it's myself as an atheist and then my spouse is a Catholic, raised Catholic, family's been Catholic or whatever. Knowing me in some sense about 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I would see what her beliefs were and see what my partner's beliefs were and look at the Catholic Church itself and think to myself, how are you possibly supporting it? Look at all this horrible stuff they're doing and you're giving them money. I would be so angry. Like I would, why would you want to still be a part of this organization, this belief system, this group? But that's not the right way to go about it.
It's not at all. Because it kind of goes back to where we started with like not taking your anger out on your partner. You also want to make sure that remember that you are in a relationship with a person and not with the institution. So like, don't expect.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So don't look at my spouse as the Pope or something like that.
Yeah. Or expect them to have an answer for every single one of your doubts or criticisms.
Oh, okay.
Right, we do that too. We want them to answer for all of the problems that you see in their belief system or organization.
Yeah, because it almost sounds like you're in some sense, like if I'm looking at it from my perspective, I would be saying, well, what about this? Like there's a contradiction here. This doesn't make any sense here. This is not fit with reality at all. How do you answer for these things? And I'm actually looking at myself saying that, and it's kind of coming across angrily as well. But
as you're seeing the reflection in the Zoom call of
yes, damn it. There's my picture right here. I'm like an asshole now. But I think I should just shut up now, actually, to be honest with you. They can't possibly have all those answers for me.
Mm-hmm. And you go back to remember that, like, this use their name, right? This is just a person that I'm talking to. It's the person that I fell in love with and that I'm choosing to spend my life with. And it's really not fair to expect that person to have an answer or to be able to rebut all of your doubts. On the same idea about remember that you're dealing with a person and not an institution, is that like sometimes it will be good for your relationship for you to show up to events that happen at religious locations, buildings.
Whoa. What?
I know.
Even if it's triggering?
Well, I have a caveat about that, right?
Okay.
Like show up for events because it's about you supporting the people that you love, not about loyalty to an institution. Okay. So I had some time to think about this when we went to my nephew's baptism. And my sister-in-law said something to me about like, hey, you know, I know that you don't believe anymore, but I want you to know that I really appreciate that you still come.
Okay.
And I kind of like sat and thought about that. And I said, you know what? Because I recognize that within their worldview, this event is really important. It's one of those like rites of passage that the whole community comes around to support that person. People don't go to baptisms just for funsies. You go because you care about the person who's there. And I didn't stop caring about my nephew because I left the church.
Got it.
And so I'm showing up not because I necessarily believe in the organization. I'm not showing up out of loyalty to that. I'm showing up because I care about this kid and that he'll notice and it matters to him if I'm there or not.
Because people are more important than beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah, damn it. It always goes back to that. That's fantastic. You know, I'm going to kind of be a little real here. My mother is still religious, and I'm not. But kind of along the lines of what you said, she hasn't necessarily come to events, but she has wanted to understand where I'm at a little bit more. And it's kind of like, hey, Eric, you've done some of these discussions. You've done a debate or something. Can you send me the link so I can kind of watch this? And I'm like, damn it, why have to be so nice? But this is my mom, and she subscribes to exactly that phrase, like people are more important than beliefs. And her son is more important to her than her belief at that time. And so she really wants to understand where I'm coming from. And I felt loved because of that.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful, like, no matter what side it's coming from.
Yeah.
And that's where we should live.
Just like if it really matters so much to your religious spouse that you come with them to church on certain holy days, or you show up for the Christmas service or something like that. Like, I think that we can do that and do it in a way that just is out of love, because this matters to the person that I care about and I want to show up for them. Mm. And like, that's okay. And sometimes it even means more to your partner to know that you're coming just for them.
Yeah.
Just because you want to make their day.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Right. I have a few little caveats on that bit of advice. Okay. One of them is that if you can show up to the thing and, you know, maybe some little feelings are stirred up while you're there, you're reminded of why you left, whatever, but you can leave and kind of like, you know, shake it off and be fine the next day, then go ahead, show up for your people, go to the event. If you're in a position or you have a traumatic history or something where you're not going to be able to go to the event without needing to go to therapy later because it's that upsetting to you, then in those situations, feel free to take care of yourself and find some other way to show up for the religious people that you love. In that, you know, baptism example, maybe I could have gone to the lunch that happened afterwards, or I could have made sure I made it to my nephew's birthday party if showing up to that event at the church building was just too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you balance that with making sure that you're going to be okay. And the other little bit of advice, because we do show up to these things and it brings up the old feelings. Like, I'm not going to lie about that. It's not, it's always easy or fun. But if you can think about these events as being from traditions, not your own, sometimes it makes it easier. So
wait, what?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So for example, right? I was raised Mormon. I grew up, was raised mostly in Utah. That's like kind of the world that I know, right? It was a long time in my life before I knew anyone like personally who was Jewish. If I got invited to one of these events, a bar mitzvah, a wedding, whatever, I would take the time to find out like, okay, so how does one dress? What should I expect? And I would show up and just kind of like maybe sit quietly in the corner or just know, like, I'm just being here for my friend. This isn't my tradition. I don't believe any of this. And I would be totally respectful because I don't have any personal history or energy with that faith tradition or worldview. And so if you find it hard to show up to the religious events of your family members or your spouse, can you like make that mental shift? What would it look like if I was just showing up for an event of a tradition that's not my own? Would you wear your like atheist t-shirt? Like probably not. You'd figure out how does one dress for these things? You dress appropriately. You're like, you know, benignly respectful to people. It's sometimes just like trying that on for size can help the secular folks check, am I being an asshole here?
Yeah, you're kind of doing that right now. And I think that I know what I'm going to be talking about next week when we have this like conversation, like, oh, well, what did you learn from last week? Yeah, I'm still freaking angry. But now what you're saying, people are more important than beliefs, and really kind of delving into this, view it as traditions, not my own. I'm not as angry at that anymore, which is, I wanted to be angry, but I can't anymore.
But here's the thing, is that like this really only matters if you've decided that those people matter to you.
Right.
If you're not interested in preserving the relationship with your religious spouse or your religious family members and friends, like, go ahead, burn all the bridges. Do whatever you want.
Got it.
If it matters to you to preserve those relationships, then you got to look at checking some of this stuff in the interest of, I care about these people.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to pause for just a second. Do we have questions that need to be addressed before we move on? I'm kind of aware that stuff's happening in the chat, but I'm not really reading it.
Yeah, there's one question here. What if the spouse is so religious that they're uncompromising and it's either their way, you know, or the highway, I guess. I mean, what can you do? Can you break through that or not?
Well, all of the same principles that I'm talking about apply in the reverse, mm-hmm. where I would be encouraging the religious spouse to have the same level of respect and understanding. And let's just acknowledge that the two of us are different and work around that. Like all of that works on the other side too. So if you want to make it work and you can get into therapy with your spouse and find someone who can help you work through these things, great. Sadly, though, sometimes it comes down to the reality that we can only change ourselves.
Okay.
That relationships mm-hmm. are always, mm-hmm. you know, take two parties. Mm-hmm. And so you can be doing all of the things to try to make this work, and your spouse just might not be willing to make those compromises. And, you know, sometimes that happens.
We talked a little bit about that with David too, like taking control of your own life and not letting mm-hmm. other people's view of you kind of change, like dictate how you feel about them or how you interact with them in a sense. So,
yeah. Because it goes back to that thing I was saying before about like, don't try to change the other person. Mm-hmm. Right? You can say, I'm willing to compromise with you. I really want to make this work. These are all these things that I'm learning. Can we please do this? Like you can be as flexible with your partner as you want to. But at the end of the day, if they just aren't willing to make those same compromises with you, it might not work. And you might not be able to force that.
And is that okay that it doesn't work?
I don't know, okay or not okay. It sometimes just doesn't.
Yeah.
That's a comforting answer or not.
I think my question comes from like in my old belief system, getting a divorce was not at all on the table. Like it wasn't okay to do that. Now that I don't have that, it's that belief system. It's more of like, can the two of us work together to make a life and create something awesome?
Yeah. So then if that's the case, that it's me and my spouse who just thinks that they're right and is absolutely unwilling to compromise with me, then maybe that's the time that you sit down and do some soul searching. Like they're unwilling to compromise in this way. Is that something I can deal with? Do I still want to stay in the marriage if this is what mm-hmm. it's going to be like?
Yeah.
And you might decide yes, and you just kind of know that that's what it's going to be and what you're continuing to sign up for, and you might decide no, not because it's okay or not okay to anybody except for you.
So kind of along those lines, do you have any statistics about like how many spouses are more upset that their partner didn't talk to them as they were going through this deconversion process, like didn't let them know what was going on? Because a lot of folks that I speak with in the support groups, that they are scared to talk to their spouses, and that's why they come. It's why they seek out organizations like RFR.
Yeah. I don't have statistics that I can just quote off the top of my head. Right. But I do know from working with couples that that's a pretty, it's not an uncommon concern. Sometimes, my brain's going like 12 different ways right now. Sometimes what happens is that when you first start down this road of doubt and deconversion, you don't know where it's going to end. And so sometimes people keep that stuff to themselves because it's like, I didn't know when I started this that I was on this road to leaving my faith. And so how could I have gone back and let you know the moment that it started? Because I didn't know at the time that that's what was happening. Sometimes people are afraid to tell their spouses because they fear the rejection and abandonment from the partner who's still in. Sometimes they're ashamed because they've got all of these messages from their religious experience that say that people who leave are deceived, that they're wicked, that they, you know, are selfish, you know, whatever, we should shun them. And so they might be hesitant to be open about it because of that internalized stuff. And in some situations, like their fears are not unfounded.
Yeah.
Where I come publicly and my spouse leaves me, or I come out publicly and now all of the people that I know and love and rely on for support won't speak to me anymore. It's not like the people who keep these things quiet are always just like, you know, super selfish.
And to hide something, yeah.
And anxious or whatever. Like sometimes it's like legitimate concerns.
What happened to me in my marriage was similar to that, where I was walking away in baby steps and it was a slow, you know, procession away from the faith. And I was in it for maybe 6 months, 8 months before I was like, whoa, I might need to tell my spouse. But then I was fearful because how is she going to react? And so I just went along for about a year and a half before we actually sat down and had this talk together. And fortunately for us, we were nearly on the same page. She was on her own journey at the same time as my journey. So I consider myself very fortunate because of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that fear of how they're going to respond. Right. You hear all these stories of marriages breaking up and stuff, and it's scary.
Okay, I'm aware of the time, so I want to move on so we get to the rest of the stuff and respect the time of the people who showed up. Is that okay?
Sounds great. Let's do
it. Okay, awesome. So, more tips. The next one is believe your partner. So what this means is your religious spouse might not ascribe 100% to the most orthodox versions of their religion.
Hmm.
All religious belief happens on a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And your believing spouse might not believe the very most extreme versions of that, or they might. But they might believe some of it and not all of it. Or they might have their own little nuanced ways of thinking about their own faith and their own belief. And so the point here is believe what your partner tells you about what their experience is, about where their beliefs lie.
So don't try to force that, like, all right, so you say you're a Southern Baptist, therefore you believe X, Y, and Z. Don't force them into a belief that they don't necessarily subscribe to.
Exactly. Exactly. And you might find that you actually have a lot more in common than you thought, or that they're not, that the picture that you have in your head is a more extreme version than who they actually are as a person.
And that's sort of like just making a straw man out of your spouse or your partner.
Yeah. Another thing on this point about believing your partner is I want you to allow for the possibility that your partner had a completely different religious experience than you did. Right? So I know in my own marriage, my upbringing, just like the people that we went to church with and who lived around me, I had a much more extreme version of the faith than my husband did, who grew up only like 40 miles away from where I did.
Mm.
And it was really hard for me to believe, like, but don't you think this, but weren't you taught that? And he was like, no.
Oh, wow.
That's not what it was for me. And I see that, you know, if we talk about belief on a spectrum, I think it's not uncommon that the person who is more orthodox or more black and white even in their belief is more likely to swing to the other direction and leave the faith than the person who's always been sort of moderate anyway. But what can happen is that if you don't realize that we were this different in our upbringing or in our ways that we approached our faith, and I swing way over here, I don't understand that you're really kind of moderate, and I'm fearful that you're as extreme as I was, but I might not actually think that might not be true. So you take the time to really believe your partner and what they say about what they believe and how they experience their faith.
This is kind of an attempt to understand them more and find some commonality, less differences and more commonality. Is that
absolutely, absolutely. And just like allowing your partner to be a full person and not, again, to be a stand-in for the institution. And I want you to, this is a super important one. Don't assume that their reasons for believing are the inverse of your reasons for leaving. Does that make sense?
No, these are stupid points. I hate this all. This is amazing.
I hate this all.
Great stuff.
Okay. So like if, for example, my reason for, you know, leaving the church might be, say, something like sexism or homophobia or, you know, whatever. These are the reasons that I can't support that institution. Don't think that that means that your spouse is some kind of like totally sexist, racist, gay hating person, and that's why they stay in the religion, because they love those things that I hate, right? Mm. Like, completely different. Their reasons for maintaining belief or wanting to maintain connection with those communities might just be tradition, community, belonging. Like, allow them to be a unique person that isn't just some kind of like caricatured foil of why you left.
But this is hard. This is not easy. Like, just setting them up as a straw man or a straw person is so much easier to do instead of trying to figure out what they believe. So why even bother? No, that makes total, man, these are good points.
Okay, so jumping ahead just a little bit, we're going to end with talking about benefits of being in these relationships. And like, these are some of them that you really get to know your spouse better because of the difference.
Because doing this work.
Yes, because doing this work. And also, like, working through this, you have to grow your own emotional maturity. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, you're going to be better people all around because you went through and you worked on these things.
Yeah.
Okay. Next principle for making these relationships work is what I call don't yuck their yum. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Like, Vegemite is disgusting, right?
Okay. actually, don't know. I've never tried it. I don't know.
No, I don't know either. But
so, you don't get to. What did I can't even read my own notes here. But the principle is, you don't get to ruin their ways of finding meaning and purpose because those things don't work for you. So, and again, looking at non-religious examples, I think can help us see what this looks like. Right? Okay.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
My husband is super into Magic the Gathering.
Those are the cards?
Card, yes. It's like super nerdy card game. Uh-huh. I don't get it. He talks to me about it and like my eyes kind of glaze over a little bit, but I'll like listen enough because it's something that he cares about. A certain amount of his time goes to playing that game. Some of our money goes to the events and to buying the cards and whatever. And like, that's okay. It's his thing. You know what? I love camping. And I go backpacking and I like long hikes and like that is my thing. And he couldn't care less. He's like, don't make me go out in the woods and walk around. Like, it's not my thing. He doesn't want to do it. But I become obnoxious, like a real asshole, if every time he talks about Magic the Gathering, I'm like, that's so dumb. What's wrong with you? Why do you like it? I don't even care about this. Don't talk to me about it. I don't want to hear it. Right? Or if he complains every time I talk about that I want to go backpacking, or that I'm spending some of our money on some gear or something like that, right?
Yeah.
People who like Star Trek or something, if every time someone brings up something that they like, you have something negative to say about it, you're just being an asshole. Like, stop.
So this is, and I can see where you're going here, this is sort of an extension on applying the same principle to the partner's belief.
Yeah, don't yuck their yum. You don't have to say something negative every time your partner mentions their belief or their church or God or prayer or something like that. Yeah. You just don't. You can do what I do when my husband talks about magic and just be like, cool, I'm glad you love it, honey. I'm glad you have friends that like to do that with you. Right? Like, that's cool. And the basic principle here is, like, if you want to have a good relationship, like, just don't be a dick. Don't be an asshole. Be a nice person and, like, be fine.
People are more important than beliefs.
Oh, yeah. They're loud. Yeah.
And when you come back to, like, think about what religion does for people in a good sense. For many people, these are the things that feed their soul. It's where they find meaning in their lives. It's where they feel they have purpose, connection to other humans, to their family and traditions. And, like, it is really not fair for you to go in and try to, like, mess all that up for them. You just don't have to do that. You can say nothing and let them have the things that make them feel good. Because at the end of the day, if your partner is happy and they have meaning in their lives and they get to do the things that bring them purpose, they're going to be a better spouse to you. And that's going to be good for your relationship. Just like you want them to allow you to have time and to support all of the things that you're into, all your secular stuff.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I have some stupid things that I like doing, and my partner, my spouse, rolls her eyes at it too. So I can understand that. Right. I'm pretty sure that, can see.
Okay, next principle, focus on values. And values here are different than beliefs. And I think this is especially important when we're talking about raising kids. So if we think about something like a value might be generosity and giving, and maybe and you might both value that, helping the poor, something like that. The way that your religious spouse chooses to live out that value might be in something like tithing to their church. And the way that you live out that value is going to be different, but you both as a couple believe in giving and being generous.
Okay.
And that's a thing that we can connect on.
So a belief would be something like, I believe that Jesus Christ was our Lord, my Lord and Savior, or something like that. And then the value would be, I think that it's important to give back to the community in trash or supporting a nonprofit organization or something.
Exactly. And when we think about, like, what are the values that we want to teach to our children? What are the character traits or personality traits that we want to really foster in them? We want them to be honest. We want them to be kind, to be responsible, to have integrity. Like, those are all things that don't have anything to do with your religious belief or non-belief. And it's a place where parents can really come together around, like, what is it that we're trying to do for our kids? And you can agree on those things and get back that sense of shared meaning and roles and the stuff that we kind of talked about at the beginning with where that's hard. Last point before we move on to benefits is to find some new rituals and traditions.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So because, like, these are the ways, like we mentioned before, about how you spend holidays or how you mark transitions in life, rites of passage. Some of your stuff might stay the same, and that's okay. It might stay the same because you like it and you want to keep the tradition. And it might stay the same because your partner shouldn't have to give up everything because you changed.
Yeah.
Like, that's a place of compromise. That, like, we can keep some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's also possible that you don't have to do everything together. You might decide that your spouse does some traditions, marks some holidays, or does some of that celebration on their own. And there's other things that you do on your own. And then there's things that we do together as a couple or as a family.
So, like, a tradition could be date night once a month or every Or even an anniversary could be a tradition, something on the anniversary, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You might make changes to your previous traditions, or you might find new meaning for the same things. Like, okay, do you still celebrate Christmas? And if you do, what exactly is it that you're celebrating now? You might decide, well, we don't want to do nothing, but what does that mean to me now? And like, you get to decide that and find ways that that new meaning shows up in how you celebrate that holiday or how you mark this change or whatever, you know, whatever it is. And I want to give all us former religious folks the permission that, like, you actually don't have to give up everything.
What? What do you mean?
There might be some things from your religious tradition that you were raised in that you decide you want to keep because you like it.
Mm.
Or because, just because, right?
Like what? Like what? What would I
like what? Okay. For example, I go to church about once a year at Christmas time with either my mother or my in-laws, whoever we happen to be with at the time, because like that's what matters to them. And we can go. This is how they find meaning and how they celebrate. And it means a lot to have their kids go to church with them. So we go to church. Okay. I love singing the hymns at church. I just do. It's fun. I miss that like communal experience that I don't get anywhere else. And to me, they don't mean what they used to, but I have this deep sense of connection to tradition. They remind me of my grandmother. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of being like young and sitting in church between my grandmother and my mom are both singers. And my grandma had this strong alto voice or soprano voice that she would just like belt it no matter what. And my mom's the alto sitting on the other side. And I would sit in between them and be in the middle of this harmony. And it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so to me, going to church and singing the hymns, it reminds me of feeling loved. It reminds me of feeling safe. It's a way that I feel connected to my grandmother who's not alive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's okay. And about once a year, like for one day during Christmas time, I'll like put on religious hymns because that to me feels like it's part of what you do to celebrate Christmas. When my kids grow up, they're probably going to hear those songs and be like, I don't know, that's some weird stuff my mom played. Like it doesn't have the same connection for them that it had for me. But about once a year, I feel like I want that.
That's really cool. That's beautiful.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it.
And there's nothing wrong with it, right? No. Like, and for you all, it might be something else or nothing at all that you decide, you know what? Every so often I want to, you know, celebrate Passover. Okay, cool. Do it. Do it because it's a connection to who you are and what your family was or not at all, you know?
Well, we talked a lot about the struggles and kind of the work that can be done to help save or help maintain a relationship with different religious beliefs in it. Mm-hmm. What would be some of the benefits to doing this work?
So we talked about a few already, right? With the like knowing each other better, really having to work through communication. I think that respect and love for your partners are definitely a benefit. When I talk to people who have been through this and have been doing it for a while, the mixed relationship, they will say things like, we have such a better relationship now than we did before. Going through this transition forced us to learn how to really respect and love each other in a way that we didn't have to do before. I actually feel closer to my partner now. And some of those things that you do, like the ways that you show up just because it matters to your partner, they're so much more visible than when we, you know, had these things in common. Lots of people have better communication, again, because the situation like forces you to develop those skills. And another benefit is that you get to know the love and commitment that your partner has for you. That they're choosing you and all the challenges that come along with it just because they want to be together with you.
And that they love you.
And that they love you.
Yeah.
Just as a person.
Yeah, anytime you have to work hard on something, it makes it more precious. You're vested more into this And I can see that, the beauty of that person and getting to know them more because I took the time to know and to put aside my biases and listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's, it's just amazing. Like, I love my work. Some of the things that I've been able to see people experience where the non-believing person is so worried, what's the extended family going to think? Now we've worked through all this stuff, but like, what's going to happen when we come out about this change to my family, to my in-laws, whatever. And like, I love seeing when the religious spouse will show up for that person.
Yeah.
I say, no, you don't get to judge them. You have no idea how hard this has been.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Or like, no, you don't even say those things about them because I love them and I choose to be with them. And so you don't get to have a say in what happens with our kids. Right? Like, that's what's the benefit on the other side of this is when you really get to see how you have each other's back. Whether that's the secular person standing up for their religious spouse in a group of atheists, it's like, hey, let's not judge them that way. That's not fair. She's not like that. Or you get to see the religious spouse stand up for the secular one in a group of religious people. It's like, no, hold on.
Yeah, I really like this. This whole discussion could be used for either side of the relationship. It's not purely, these tools aren't purely for just the secular person in the relationship or the purely for the religious person. It's for both of them. These are fantastic tips. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Rebecca, you've given us some resources. I'm going to copy and paste them into the chat. Everyone, these resources will be also listed in the description for on the YouTube channel. I can't promise when I'll get that out because I'm editing it, but it will be out by Friday. So here are some resources that Rebecca has provided for us. And then if you want to get a hold of Rebecca, here is how you can get a hold of her. I'll copy that into the chat as well.
Yeah, follow me on social media. Like I mentioned about the course that I'm in the process of developing, but don't know yet when it'll be out, I will be making announcements on the social media account. So if you want to be aware of that, you can follow me there.
Perfect. Well, we have, like we said at the beginning, we've got a bunch of questions that we'll ask you. So one of the questions that came up when we were talking about going and participating in an event or tradition for the religious spouse or for the secular spouse, one of the things that I would be concerned about is like if I showed up to and sat in a church service, that in some sense I would feel like I'm supporting that organization, supporting what it stood for. And how would you recommend I kind of deal with that? I'm kind of putting myself in that position in a sense. Like if I went to a Catholic church and sat in that pew and listened to the stuff that the person was saying, it would almost feel like I'm supporting that the organization.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And my first thought is that you can show up to that event and not support the organization financially. You don't have to put money in the plate when it comes by. But I also think like you get to decide what that means to you.
Mm.
So for me, right, like showing up doesn't mean that I ascribe to these beliefs or I support this institution. It means like I'm here for my friend who's getting married and I care about that person. And that's what me being here means to me.
Okay, I can get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question. This is a fairly common topic for people reaching out to our helpline, mm-hmm. of a person who's no longer religious and they're getting married and they're going to have a secular wedding. Do you have any advice on how they can handle this situation? Because it's so hard for the family members to accept it. They come and say, we're not going to show up. If you don't get married in the church, we can't support you. You're not in our eyes, you're not really married. Do you have any advice for people like that?
Okay, so the question is more not how to do the wedding, but how you respond to those
Yes.
Doubts how, from
how
your
would you
family
respond
friends?
If your parents are saying, we're not going to come if you don't get married in the church?
Okay. A couple of ideas. One is, again, like you get to decide what this means to you, and you can communicate that meaning to your family members. This is why we're doing this. This is why we're deciding to get married, and we really would like your support. So sometimes just like a little bit of education for the family about what the event is going to be, how they should show up, what it means to you, what them showing up would mean to you. Like you can tell them that and they might be able to connect with that because you're putting it out there and making it explicit. I'm just asking for you to love me and support me as a person because you care about me. And that might be enough to get your parents or siblings or other religious people to be like, Oh, it's not about me.
It's about you.
I do care about you. I do want to show up for this thing. And then I had a second thing and now I've temporarily forgotten it. It'll come back to me. If it comes back to me, I'll share. Go ahead.
I have officiated a lot of several weddings and that question has come up several times. And I kind of talked to them a little bit about like, and my stance on it is, look, this is your day. This isn't about your parents. This isn't about your friends and family. This is you. This is an expression of you. And how do you want to remember this? What do you want this to look like? And be okay with that in a sense. And so what's interesting is some of these couples chose to go ahead with just the secular ceremony without any prayer or without connecting God in it, in the relationship at all. And some of the feedback that I received and we received from the parents who threw a fit at first was like, oh, wow, that was really beautiful ceremony. The things that were said were so good. And focusing on the couple and not bringing a deity into it kind of turned out okay in the cases that I've participated in.
Yeah, thank you for that. Because I think that that's kind of what I was hinting at when I was saying you could tell them what it means. like share with them some of what you have planned or just ask for them to show up and like let them see and experience what it is because they just might not know. If them marriage means this and this is how it's supposed to go, it could be hard to even think about, well, like what's the ceremony going to be like? What it like, why and what is this and whatever. And if you can like tell them a little bit, they might be able to be on board coming back to this idea of values and not beliefs. We value commitment to each other. We value our family relationships. We really want you to be there to like bear witness to this important event that's happening in our lives.
Yeah.
We want you to support us. And when you frame it that way, your family might be like, okay, we can do that for you.
Yeah. That is something I try and gently say is like, this is your day. Yeah. You dictate how you want to show up to your friends and family. I encourage that. And it seems to work out okay sometimes, or most all the times I've done it, it seems to work out okay. Let's see here. What other questions do we have?
I have one here.
Yeah.
So is there ever a time to call it quits? Have you ever had a session and you're like, okay, this is just not going to work?
To the first part of the question, is there ever a time to call it quits? I think, yeah, there is. And you get to decide when that is for you. Right? You get to decide when it's been enough, what you're willing to put up with, to keep working on, whatever. Every relationship has pros and cons and give and take. And you have to decide for yourself where that is. Mm-hmm. The second part, like me as a therapist, is there ever a time when I think like, yeah, this just, it really isn't going to work. Yeah. The thing is I don't get to make that call. I really believe this. It's not my choice because that's not my life. And I don't have to do the work. And I also don't live with the consequences of that decision, good and bad. It's not my choice to make. So what I will do for people as a therapist is like, we'll, you know, I have a procedure that I go through with everybody. We have you fill out some questionnaires that are based in research. And like, I can give you all the data. These are the strengths in this relationship. These are the challenges that you have to face. This is what I think it would take for you to get from where you are to where you want to be. But I don't get to tell you whether you want to do that work or not, whether you want to make those compromises or not. Like, that's not on me and not on my choice. And like some people who, cause like I'm a person too, right? So like, sometimes I'll see couples that I think like, wow, I just don't understand why you two are together. I don't understand how neither of you has called it quits yet. And yet here you are. And you both still working. Want to work on it. And so, okay, I'm going to support you through it. And there's other couples who come in that I think like have so much going for them. And one of them decides that they want a divorce. And there again, I'm like, I don't really like, I don't understand it, but there again, like not my call to make. And so if that's what they want to do with their lives, like that's what they want to do. And I can help them figure out what that looks like and how to do it in an ethical, responsible, kind way. But yeah, I don't ever say, no, this can't work.
Yeah. I think we got time for two more questions. Okay. One of the questions is, and I kind of like this, how does this all relate to platonic relationships? Not necessarily just partners, husband and wife or spouses, but in other types of relationships, maybe girlfriend, boyfriend, or just Todd and I being friends.
Friends, yeah. I think so many of the same principles apply as far as just like having respect for the other person, agreeing to disagree on things, deciding when you're going to show up for the person and not for the institution, not being an asshole in like pointing out all the ways that you think that thing they're into is stupid. Right? I think a lot of that stuff still applies. There is something that someone put in the chat last week that I said we would get to today, and I don't think we've actually talked about, which is like how you respond to your religious friends who like extend invitations to come to church or who, you know, kind of put those things on you. And I think you can just like be respectful, like thanks, but no thanks. I think it's really important, again, if you value the relationship, to look at what that thing means in the context of that relationship.
Mm. Like people are more important than beliefs.
Yeah. Mm. So like my friend inviting me to church, is that because they're trying to missionary me? Maybe. It might also be that they see that I'm going through a rough time and this is the way that they know to help people.
Oh, okay.
And so I can look at that as an invitation to help and decide that that way of help doesn't work for me, but it doesn't have to mean that my friend hates me if I can see that from their point of view, this is a kindness.
Got it.
I also do this thing sometimes where I will like translate. So if someone says something like, oh, I'm praying for you, and that doesn't like, I don't really want prayers, that doesn't work for me. Like what do I wish they would have said? I'm thinking about you. I hope this works out well for you. Ah, okay. I can translate that. Like, oh, this is what I wish they would have said it, what they would have said instead, or what I think that they meant, they just use this religious language, then that can help too. It helps me feel better about being in the relationship because now I see that the person cares and not that they're trying to change me. Some people are trying to change you and that's a different story, but sometimes they're just being kind in the way that they know how to be kind.
And that hidden agenda isn't always as hidden as people think. It's kind of
right. But the truth is too, that some people don't have a hidden agenda.
Mm.
And when they say that they're praying for you or like thoughts and prayers or God bless or whatever, they don't mean anything by it except I wish you well.
Mm.
And so if their religious things don't have a hidden agenda, they just love you, then like I can be okay with that.
It's like saying bless you when you sneeze.
Yeah.
And then our last question is, the question is, what if your spouse wants to spend money on tithing but would never allow you to send money to atheist organizations?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Sounds like this is a tough conversation that they would have to have with their spouse. Yeah.
And I see it sometimes in the reverse where the atheist spouse is like absolutely adamant that we not give any money to that religious organization. I just can't support it. I can't have any of my dollars going there, which is the same issue in reverse.
Yeah.
Usually what I recommend for people is that you reach a fair compromise where maybe you as a couple decide this is how much money we have for giving and we're going to split that dollar amount in half and you do what you want with your half and I do what I want with my half.
Okay.
And some variation of that usually will work for people. And like in a non-combative way, there might be a way that this person could say to their spouse, like, hey, I get that you don't want to support atheist organizations. I really understand that. And I'm not trying to force you to do things that are really against your beliefs. And I'm not doing that to you. I'm not forbidding you from paying the tithes to your church. And so I'm asking you to please allow me the same like kindness and, you know, respect that I'm giving to you. Would you please give that back to me? So that it's really framed in the relationship context. It's about us loving and supporting each other. And it's not about, again, person and not institution. It's not about atheism and it's not about religion. It's about like us as partners and how we're compromising and supporting each other.
Wow. Rebecca, you're amazing.
Yes,
this is so good.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this conversation.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.